Park Art Center in downtown Bemidji, featuring exhibits by Indigenous artists in the Mikanon Gallery. The center is accessible and open to all. More at watermarkartcenter.org.
And thanks to Happy Dancing Turtle for their support. They're a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. More info, happydancingturtle.org.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters DJ Dang. 1 o'clock, DJ the DJ, our host for On the River. And tonight at 7, DJ Lake Poseidon.
And in about 10 minutes, we are going to be talking about the Summer Derecho and a survey coming up about that.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump has arrived in China for a state visit. It's his first trip there in nearly a decade. Trump hopes to focus on business arrangements and not on the war in Iran.
We have a lot of things to discuss. I wouldn't say Iran is one of them, to be honest with you, because we have Iran very much under control.
The ceasefire between Iran and the U.S. has been holding, but Iran continues to throttle commercial oil shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. China is a major purchaser of Iranian oil. Iran's foreign minister visited China last week for talks. A report out today offers new details on math and reading scores for students in the United States. As NPR's Corey Turner reports, researchers say big losses in learning didn't begin with the coronavirus pandemic some 6 years ago, but years earlier.
The annual report is called the Education Scorecard, and it comes from researchers at Stanford, Harvard, and Dartmouth. Poring over decades of math and reading scores, the researchers say America's students hit a learning recession, not during COVID-19, but around 2013. Stanford researcher Sean Reardon.
In fact, you wouldn't really know there was a pandemic effect if you just looked at the last 10 or 12 years of test scores. There's been just a steady kind of decline.
As for why learning got so derailed, the researchers have two theories. One, a big federal education law was essentially abandoned around 2013, meaning school leaders started feeling less pressure to improve. And two, social media use among U.S. youth started to skyrocket. Corey Turner, NPR News.
Tennessee Democrats are facing consequences for protesting the passage of new congressional maps. From member station WPLN in Nashville, Mariana Bacallao has more.
The state was the first to redistrict after a Supreme Court case paved the way for Republicans to split Memphis into three districts. A similar effort in South Carolina failed. But although Tennessee Republicans were successful, House Speaker Cameron Sexton is taking issue with a walkout Democrats staged during the redistricting session. Sexton is now removing all Democrats from their House committee assignments for breaking decorum, further limiting the say they're able to have in the Republican supermajority. Democratic leader Karen Camper from Memphis says it's not about decorum, quote, it's about control. For NPR News, I'm Mariana Bacallao in Nashville.
There are reports from the Philippines that shots have been fired in the country's Senate chambers in Manila. It's not clear who was firing. Philippines authorities have been trying to arrest a senator who's also wanted by the International Criminal Court. Senator Ronald De La Rosa is a former national police chief for former Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte. The ICC is investigating De La Rosa for alleged crimes against humanity, the same charge Duterte is facing as he waits for trial in The Hague. This is NPR. A bomb blast in northwestern Pakistan yesterday killed at least 9 people and injured dozens more. As Betsy Joles reports from Islamabad, the bombing was in a region near the border with Afghanistan, stoking already tense relations between the neighbors.
Pakistani police say the blast in Sarai Norang in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province was caused by a bomb on a rickshaw that was detonated in an outdoor market. It comes just days after 15 people were killed in another militant attack in a nearby district. These attacks took place amid a dispute between Pakistan and the Taliban government in Afghanistan over escalating militancy. Since launching a military campaign in late February, Pakistan claims to have killed hundreds of fighters from the Afghan Taliban and its ideological affiliate, the Pakistan Taliban, inside Afghanistan. Pakistan says it wants the Afghan Taliban to vow to control the groups carrying out attacks. The Afghan Taliban government says security is Pakistan's domestic problem. For NPR News, I'm Betsy Joles in Islamabad.
The federal government says that wholesale inflation jumped 6% in April compared to the same time period a year earlier. The producer price index measures how much U.S. businesses pay before the costs reach the consumer. A huge increase in gasoline costs made up 40% of the jump in prices that businesses paid in April. Yesterday, the federal government reported the consumer price index showed an increase of 3.8% compared to a year ago. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Integrative Therapeutics, maker of Cortisol Manager, a formula created by Integrative Therapeutics with the goal of supporting the body's natural stress response. Available at Amazon.com. This is NPR.
Come on, let it out now. Turn a thought into a whisper. Push it, come to shove it. Spit turn to vapor. I've been wondering where my mind went. I think it's down between the earth and the pavement. Friday nights come, oh, we're made up. Veins of ice and tiger blood. Come on, let it out now. Hope you will remember that we're all childlike and careless.
To be
And that was Tiger Blood by Houndmouth from their upcoming album, Lordy. It is 8:09, and you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. And it's been almost a year since last year's derecho in Bemidji.
It was Saturday, June 21st. There were winds of over 100 miles an hour, and something like over 9 million trees were lost in this derecho.
Yes, and now the College of St. Scholastica, Bemidji State University, and the Bemidji Long-Term Storm Recovery Group are launching a community-based research study to learn about how the storm affected people. Join us now, Dr. Leah Prussia and Sue Rickers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
So what can you tell us about what this survey is all about?
Well, the survey and the research is really an invitation for folks that experienced the storm here in the Bemidji area to share and help understand how they were impacted, any unmet or ongoing needs. There's really two portions to the survey. Again, one is about services and access to services. What is still needed? As far as storm recovery related to house, to cleanup. But I know that Sue, Ashley Charwood, and Travis Ricks were really interested in the mental health portion. Often in storm recovery, we deal with the immediate, restoring electricity, removing obstacles, clearing trees, but mental health is often set aside. And this month, as you are aware, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and I think the opening of this survey is really quite timely. So, we want a deeper understanding of how folks were impacted. I know that I've decided to be pretty vulnerable on the radio, and after the derecho hit, it was about a month and a half of tearfulness every day and grief about the loss, even though I didn't experience some of the physicality of the losses to houses, homes, cars. It was a deeper wounding that I was really surprised that lasted for about a month and a half.
You know, there was, I think Andrew did an interview after the storm about the loss of trees and what that means to us. That specific, there's so many other things that happen within that storm, but I don't think you realize how connected you are to the trees in your yard or the trees you pass every day.
And yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if now it's been, because like I feel like the first few months after the storm happened, everyone was so focused on the idea of cleaning up the trees, getting them out of the way. But like, this is the first time now that trees are starting to bloom that I think people are really going to notice, like, wow, so many trees are not back this year.
Absolutely. I know for me, even driving around now, I'm like, oh, I didn't notice that area. And I thank you for naming that piece, because I think that deep loss of those old growth pines was a big deal for folks that consider Bemidji home. I also just want to name that, those eagles that have inhabited Diamond Point Park for numerous generations, and the loss of the eaglets, the three eaglets, what was a big deal. It was trees, squirrels, birds. Thankfully there was no loss of human life, but I think we're touched deeply by our natural relatives and those losses.
So what kind of came together so it felt like now is the time to put something like this together?
We're nearing that anniversary point, and as I mentioned earlier, mental health is often the last thing to get addressed, and we want to normalize the importance of talking about the feelings, the grief, the anger, the frustration. I know just as I've been flyering various places, folks have mentioned that, with the increased wind speeds, that there's a little bit of worry and anxiety that starts to bubble up. And I really want to invite people to, again, lean into connection, reach out for support, because that's how we heal, is in relationship and connection.
And I think now that it has been a while, you may still need some physical help of some of the trees that came down, but it's hard to ask, unless someone has that sort of invitation to, you know, does who do you need help? Do you need help taking care of things?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, part of what we've been wanting to do is really focus on community and building community and building partnerships. And so as part of developing this survey, we've worked with several community members. We worked with the long-term storm recovery group here in Bemidji, and that includes organizations like the United Way and Community Resource Connection. There's someone from the county and someone from the city that's a part of that organization, and Northwest Minnesota Foundation. And we worked with them in developing the survey, and then also I know they've been working very hard on trying to help people who still need roof work done or siding or need trees removed, and we've included a link in our survey that will connect them into that into those services if they're still needing that kind of support. So we really do want this to be a community-based survey and research.
What did you both see in terms of the community coming together when the storm actually happened? You know, we've been talking a lot about the state of Minnesota from what happened in Minnesota this past winter and the state coming together to help. Did you see that in community here?
I certainly did. So I live right here in Bemidji, and I was fortunate. I did not have damage to my house, but I was without electricity for probably 5 or 6 days and had damage to fences on my property. But in my neighborhood, we kind of hung out for the days none of us had electricity in the evenings, and we supported each other in kind of trying to do that cleanup. And I had friends who came by and helped me remove trees. And so really seeing those kinds of community. I didn't personally participate, but I've heard lots of wonderful stories about meals that were served or people who pulled their grills out and helped support people with food and with water. So definitely saw some of those things happening.
I remember the day after the storm, my niece and her partner came over, and hearing the stories that Sue was sharing, I think that's one of the keys with some of the acute stress or trauma around a major weather event like this is, how do we hold on to those little pieces of goodness? Mm-hmm. And so for me, that an anchor was seeing my family come right away to come and check on our safety and help. The other piece that I wanted to say is, you know, while we were extremely hit in the Bemidji area, I want to name, you know, those winds and that storm came from the west, ripped through, you know, states, came through here, touched, you know, many of our friends and relatives' places and spaces over by Leech Lake. And even though this survey is really focusing on Bemidji, the hope is by gathering localized data that by sharing what we find out that it can more generally support other communities that were impacted similarly.
So where can people, how can they participate in the survey?
Yeah, so we have flyers out and available around in the community. It's open to anyone over the age of 18 to take the survey. It's a 17-question survey, so it doesn't take real long. We wanted to be really intentional about people's time and getting that information. We're also going to have information available through KAXE, KBXE for taking that survey. It is a link, so it's all electronic. It's a link. It's just a matter of clicking on the link and moving through and taking that survey.
And so where can people, after you've compiled the data, how will that be available to people?
Yeah, go ahead, Leah.
Yeah, we're looking at early fall, bringing the community together to find out what we, you know, what we learned from folks that participated in the survey. I just want to remind folks, you know, you can share as much or as little as you would like to in the survey. There's a couple of areas for open-ended sharing, and whatever you feel comfortable with will be very helpful for us, not only for the Bemidji community, but for surrounding communities and, you know, even nationally. So I'm sorry, I lost track of the question.
Of just like, how will people be able to access the data when it's compiled together and stuff?
Yeah, so we will be putting, you know, together information, holding a community connection, sharing, you know, with the media, and since this is such a deep collaborative, especially with the long-term storm recovery group, we're going to be making that data available so other organizations can utilize it to access grants, build upon their services. So it's not just a one and done with BSU, Scholastica, and the Long-Term Storm Recovery Group. We're really wanting to share what we've learned so they can expand their programming based on the information.
We are talking this morning with Dr. Leah Prusha and Sue Rickers. They are part of this community-based research study to learn about how the derecho affected people in the Bemidji area last year. Tell us a little bit about, I lost my train of thought. What are you hoping, you talked about, Sue, that there's a link within the survey for help if people still need additional help. What do you hope comes from this with that people will learn or come together or get something from it too as they participate in it?
Sure. I think there are different pieces to that. So I think one piece is just a better understanding of what kinds of supports people needed, used, how in, you know, if we have a similar situation in the future, how we can improve upon those kinds of things. There have been people who've been working so hard in the community and providing those services, and also thinking about, are there ways we can streamline some things? But then I think we're also really wanting the opportunity for some connection and for some healing. Part of our survey asks about resilience. It asks about mental health. It also asks about resilience. And we're really wanting to focus on that healing and support that happens within community.
Will, tell us a little bit about why each of you are involved, what your background is. And
sure. So I've been at Bemidji State University, just finished my 14th year. I work in the social work program, and I live in the community, experienced the derecho, was very powerful for me. I was teaching a research course this fall, and students get to decide what it is they want to do, a practice research project, and they chose the difference on the Bemidji State campus and that impact on them related to the storm and the loss of trees there on campus. And then Leah came and was a guest speaker in one of my classes, and we just got to talking. And it really just sort of evolved out of that process. Leah?
Yeah. So as I've been thinking about this, when did I first engage with natural disasters? And I grew up in the Red River Valley and was actively involved as a baby social worker in the flood of 1997. So I've always had an innate interest about the intersection of personal and planetary health. So a lot of my research and scholarship and clinical work surrounds what does that look like. And in 2019, I worked with the Minnesota Department of Health on a survey about knowledge, attitudes, and practices about what mental health professionals were seeing as far as the impacts of our changing climate on folks that they were working with. And so to have experienced this extreme weather event, I knew exactly what I knew that collaboration was needed to find a deeper understanding of what happened here. It's been a lot of life's work for me, but I also do private practice and work with a lot of folks surrounding trauma.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you'd also want to encourage, because I think there's a attitude Minnesotans have of just like, okay, I didn't have it so bad, so this survey isn't for me. But like you were saying, like when it gets windy, even though all the trees around my apartment fell down, it didn't go through my roof or crash on my car or anything like that. But you're right. Every time a storm happens now, in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, is this the storm that's going to all of a sudden become 100-mile-per-hour winds? And it's something that's in the back of my head. And I think that you're encouraging people, even if you don't think that you were that affected by it, there's still these little things that affected you.
Well said. Well said. And we want to hear from everybody. We've all been touched by this in different ways, and it's an opportunity to learn from and with one another and build future services, to prepare for events.
Yeah, we as a media organization have used the derecho as a way to explore how we can be better, how we can serve the community better during a storm like that. And they're setting up kind of protocol for who would be on duty and how do we do this? Because we feel like we have the ability to ask people what's going on for them and hear people's stories. And we want to do that for people when something like this happens throughout northern Minnesota, the area we cover. So, you know, we're trying to be better and trying to get that in place. We always talked about we got to do that someday, but sometimes it takes something happening to actually get it done.
So, like I said, we're going to have that survey available on KXE.org later today. Is there any final thoughts that either of you have about the survey or about the derecho?
We really encourage folks to participate. Your voices matter, but I also want to give a big shout out to the first responders and the long-term storm recovery group who have tirelessly and continue to work to address the impacts of the storm that touched us. I just want to, you know, one of the members from that team said, for some people, the storm isn't over. And that's really why we're doing this research, too, to ensure that folks get the services and support they need.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Well, you'll be able to find a link to this community-based research study at our website, kaxe.org. Leah, Sue, thanks for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, now we're going to hear a tune from Parlor Greens. This song is called Eat Your Greens. And that was Parlor Greens with Eat Your Greens as a way to cap off our salad talk today.
Yeah. Do you eat your greens? Do you eat enough greens?
Do I eat enough greens? Probably not.
Okay.
But I have my spinach smoothies, and I'm trying to get back into my salads on Monday, Tuesdays again.
Yeah. I have such high hopes for salads, and then it's like you buy the stuff and you don't use it always. And
my problem is I get so hungry afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, you eat it and you're like, okay, I'm full. But then like 2 hours later, I'm like, I need something.
Yeah, I hear you. It's Andrew Dzingel. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in. It is Wednesday morning, and we would like to thank the Move It Real Estate Group for their support. They assist clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. MoveItRealEstate.com.
And we receive support from the Bemidji Jaycees, announcing their 82nd annual Water Carnival, July 1st through the 5th by the Lake Bemidji Waterfront and at the Sanford Center. More information on events at BemidjiJaycees.com. And we receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at BrainstormBakery.com.
Coming up, we've got local news and the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Divers found the body of a teenager Tuesday afternoon in a lake in Emily. According to a news release from Crow Wing County Sheriff Eric Klang, a 19-year-old man called 911 around 12:30 and said the paddle boat he was on capsized on Little Emily Lake. The man said he and two women were in the water before the call unexpectedly disconnected. Responders arrived to find the woman, ages 20 and 22. They said the man had not returned to shore. Responders recovered his body in roughly 23 feet of water around 3 p.m. The three were college students visiting the area. One of the women was transported by ambulance for injuries related to cold exposure. Former state senator Justin Eichhorn appears to be changing his plea to guilty for the federal criminal charge of soliciting a minor. His trial was set to begin June 1st. Eichhorn was charged in March 2025 after a prostitution sting operation in Bloomington, where an undercover police officer posed as a 17-year-old online. The former legislator represented Senate District 6, including the cities of Grand Rapids and Brainerd. He resigned shortly after the criminal charge. Eichhorn filed a notice of a change of plea on Monday. A hearing is scheduled for 9 a.m. Thursday in St. Paul. Minnesota school districts could see a boost in state funding without increasing taxes or dipping into the state general fund. Report for Minnesota's Abby Mulcahy reports a constitutional amendment will likely be on the ballot this November to increase payouts from the permanent school fund. Money in the fund comes from the sale of timber, minerals, and the land itself on Minnesota's school trust lands. Most of that land is in northern Minnesota. Permanent school fund dollars are distributed to all schools based on their enrollment. Republican Representative Spencer Igo sponsored the bill to increase the distribution of the fund by 2%. For a school around Grand Rapids size with about 300 kids per grade, that would mean an extra $100,000. School districts across Minnesota are struggling with budget deficits, driven largely by a lack of state funding and declining enrollment. As Igo told a House committee earlier this session, the extra money from the increase would be a stopgap for many districts.
Sometimes this is the difference between cutting a teacher or not. Other times it's making sure to fix the leaky gym. Other times it's making sure that the school buses can get upgraded so they can keep going out in the cold.
The measure passed the legislature nearly unanimously. The House needs to pass the Senate's amended version before the question can appear on the ballot in November. Most educators in the Brainerd School District have been working without a contract since last June. Chelsea Perkins visited a rally there ahead of Monday night's school board meeting.
More than 350 educators and community members assembled to call attention to the unsettled union contracts. It's been 315 days since contracts expired. Dave Borash teaches social studies and is the 2026 Teacher of the Year. He says the drawn-out process is really weighing on people.
You know, you want to walk in, you want to hold your head high, and you want to feel like you're part of something that's special, and it's kind of hard to do that lately.
Misty Job is the union president and a 22-year English teacher at the Brainerd Learning Center. She says they want to see their contracts mirror the state average for increases.
We have sort of become increasingly frustrated by the narrative that's been presented by the district multiple times that we are overcompensated and that our health benefits are too generous. We have traded other things in the past to be able to maintain the quality of the health care that we have.
In comments at the end of Monday's board meeting, Superintendent Peter Grant said he feels anxiety in the buildings about the financial picture.
We've been 1 year in negotiating four contracts, we've only settled one. That's another piece of anxiety. People want to get that settled. I get that. Easier said than done.
Like many other school districts, Brainerd is facing budgetary challenges. But unlike many other districts, it does not have a voter-approved operating levy. The board is considering a levy and elementary school consolidation with the new superintendent taking the helm in July. Job says right-sizing the district and compensating teachers fairly are not mutually exclusive. Chelsea Perkins, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
On today's date, May 13th, 1994, I find my first pussy toes. Pussy toes are familiar to just about everybody. You may not know them by name, but you have seen them. If you have a patch of lawn, somewhere in that lawn there is a somewhat circular patch of white-looking flowers. The leaves are very, very pale, kind of a sage green, and the flowers are quite white. And if you look closely at the flowers, you'll discover that they are either male or female. They are never mixed. So each of these circles in your lawn, and there may be 50 to 100, some cases 1,000 plants in what would be a 8 to 10 foot circle of these plants, and they are sexually discrete. That is, they are either all male or all female. And the reason for that is that when the seed lands on the ground and begins the process, they grow rhizomatously. So you get a single seed, which is either a male or female plant, and it hits the ground and starts to grow. And all of its brothers and all of its brothers or sisters are going to be identical because they're coming up from the same seed.
And that is your Daily Dose of Phenology with John Latimer here on the Wednesday Morning Show. And perhaps you are on your walk right now with John Latimer, a warbler walk.
There we go.
Going on until 9 o'clock this morning.
That's right. There are opportunities at area, you know, nature, I don't know how you say it, centers. Things like Forest History Center and Northland Arboretum in Brainerd, they have regular walks going on where you can learn more about the birds. And as John Latimer says, you need sometimes other eyes to see them. Like he can't always hear them. People are using the Merlin app. I'm saying it again because I want you to use it. But anyway, there's all kinds of cool opportunities out there. You can also tell us, do you have a favorite bird? I'm now, I think, taking on the song sparrow. I love it. I did not know how sweet it was. It certainly is a song.
So you base your favorite birds on song. See, I'm a looks guy. I love the blue jay because it looks cool.
Classic Andrew.
I know it's a menace to all the other birds, and it's very loud and annoying.
What is one?
The blue jay.
Oh, yeah. I sort of like them. They're feisty. And the red-winged blackbird, they are going at it at our house between the two of them. But then you hear, ooh, this lovely, sweet songbird.
I mean, how cool is it that blue jays can impersonate hawks to scare off other birds so they can get the food?
It is. It is pretty cool.
Seems like something I would do. And I have to respect it.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of respect, it is basketball season's wrapping up right now.
Yep.
And
beginning. Kicking up, yep, for the Minnesota Lynx.
So we got the Timberwolves last night, devastating loss.
Oh, really?
Last night.
Lovely win for the Minnesota Lynx last night. They beat Phoenix, which was the team that knocked them out of the championships last year, so that was a nice win for them, just by 4 points. I didn't get to see the whole game. It's a weird, you know, they did all this contract negotiation for various things for the team and for fans so that you could readily see the games more, that all of them are televised. But last night's, I assumed it would be on TV, but it wasn't. It was on this Victory is the name of it app, and it's free sports stuff. So that's a little tip going out there too.
Yeah.
I started watching some of it, but the game didn't start till 8:55.
Oh, I suppose because it was in Phoenix.
Yeah. So I made myself not watch the whole thing, but I was at the Target Center Saturday night for the home opener. Is that what you call it in basketball? Anyway, and so exciting and good to see the new team, and I'm really excited to see how they're all going to work together, especially Olivia Miles. That was the second seed. We got the second pick from college. I don't know what the words I'm trying to say.
Draft pick.
That's the word. And she's the starter on the team. And she's doing great. So I'm very, very excited about it. And it was a really fun event. I forget, I was going to talk to you about this. There were like towels on each of the chairs, you know, that were like in the shape of a jersey and looked like a tiny jersey, but they were just towels to like throw that everybody got one.
They just like did it have a number on it or just?
It had a number on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Now that I don't know what it is. Oh. But anyway, I just think it's so funny where I maybe like you act differently in a big Target Center setting than you would. Like, I wasn't in the section that was hitting the plastic things together when the other team had free throws, right? But you know, I'm just shaking the towel and you're like excited when Prowl, the mascot, comes out, and I'm just like, who am I? This is not usually me.
So at games, are you a join in the chants type fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
defense.
That's what I find. Yeah, I find that very, I don't go very often to the games, but I find that really interesting that I just immediately, I'm like, yeah, I'm all in here. So anyway, but it was also, it's so many people, man.
And then leaving, oof.
Yeah, we were staying in a hotel and we took an Uber because we had been doing stuff during the day. And
even with an Uber, you have to like, differentiate maneuver yourself from the pack.
Yeah, we had to run across the street. I think that's it. And we're shouting out the license plate and all that stuff. But yeah, it all went smoothly. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad. It was really cool to be able to go to the opening game. Shout out to my friend Julie, who couldn't be at the game and gave us her tickets. So that was really
cool. How close were you?
Very cool.
Do you want to share?
They weren't bad seats. We weren't super close.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You weren't like courtside, like
God, no,
like Jack Nicholson at a Lakers game.
Yeah. No, I was not at all.
Would you do that? Would you be a celebrity sit at the courtside person? I don't like being that close. I don't think
I don't either, because you could get hit in the head with a basketball,
and like sweat could get on you.
I mean, growing up as a kid with glasses, I got hit in the face in bombardment, you know, and then it hurts even more. Like if it didn't shatter your glasses, it just like it hits your nose, you know? And so I think I would flash back to all those years in bombardment or elimination, those dodgeball.
So games. I didn't have glasses when I played basketball, but I had braces and I got hit in the face with the basketball and I had hooks on the thing and it hooked into my lip. Oh, that
you know
was
what
awful.
I'm realizing? We were the coolest kids ever.
Why are we keep getting hit in the head?
So the next game of the Minnesota Lynx, they play on Thursday night, and that one, I believe, is on Amazon Prime. So you got to really be looking for where these games might be.
Yeah, the Timberwolves, their next game is on Friday, and it's on Amazon Prime as well.
Okay, yeah.
This support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the Upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
And thanks to Hug Hydronics, committed to making in-floor heating simple, providing in-floor heating solutions for both commercial and residential, HUGHydronics.com. I'm also like at the game, they play Prince a lot.
Mm,
and
makes
it's
sense.
So cool. It really feels like, wow. our state. Yeah,
that's good. And we receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com. Member FDIC. Now it's time for Area Voices.
My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Bemidji Community Contra Dance has another event going on this Saturday, May 16th, and it'll begin with a potluck and a silent auction, and then music and dancing with a very special guest musician all the way from Denmark. Today, I'm joined by that musician and a member of the Bemidji Contra Dance to talk about the event and what to expect this Saturday.
My name is Christian Bugge, and I'm a fiddle player from Denmark. I grew up playing for different kinds of folk dancing in Denmark, and I've played for a lot of contra dances while touring in the U.S. in different parts, like in the West Coast and the Midwest especially. And I always enjoy when people get up and dance. You can kind of sense how the fiddle tunes were made for dancing, really. So that's great to still use it for that.
I'm Mitch Mitchell, and I am a member of the Bemidji Contra Dance Committee. I started going to contra dances several years ago, and you know how things go. You know, if you show up, you sometimes get asked to do things. And so I've been serving on the committee for about the past, oh, I want to say 3 years now. And I do all the posters and the PSAs that go out. Yeah, and we're really excited to host Christian and his friend W.B. Reed from Seattle for this upcoming Contra Dance on May 16th, Saturday.
So, Christian, first off, how did you get into music? Do you remember when you first started being interested in music?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I started actually folk dancing as a seven-year-old kid. My mom took my sister and me to folk dancing, and while doing the dancing, I got some of those tunes going around my head. And then in class five, I got the chance at my school to start violin lessons. But pretty quickly, you know, I wanted to get onto the fiddle repertoire and try and find those dance tunes on the instrument. So I later joined a youth ensemble for folk music where we played dance tunes from all over Scandinavia, and then it kind of went on from there, and I never managed to let go of this fiddling, and yeah. So that's how I ended up here, also touring in the States.
I'm curious, Christian, how did you get connected with W.B. Reed?
I've known him for quite a few years, coming in the folk circles out around Seattle, where he lives. We've been to the same festival a number of times called Festival of American Fiddle Tunes. That's in Port Townsend, Washington, and we've met at jam sessions, and we always had the love in common for Midwestern fiddle tunes. I've learned a lot of tunes from Dwight Lamb down in Iowa, whom I met on my first trip to the U.S. back in 2008, and Dwight has a special connection also to Denmark that made me curious right away. His grandfather came over from northern Denmark all the way back in 1893. So Dwight had, beside his Midwestern repertoire, he also had a big repertoire of Danish fiddle tunes. And a lot of those tunes were forgotten in Denmark, so only kept alive by Dwight and his grandfather. So that was quite a fairy tale to meet Dwight. And that was one of the reasons why I kept coming back to the Midwest and Iowa. And in fact, the first state I ever visited in the U.S. was Minnesota. And we were invited to play at the Nisswa Stemman, a Scandinavian festival up in Nisswa, Minnesota. That was back in 2008. And that's where it all started for me, coming here. And
so one thing I'm always curious about, Christian, especially in playing folk music, is that what's it like for you as a musician to be continuing this tradition that's been like basically since man created music, been passing music down to each other, and you're continuing that tradition? What's that like for you as a musician, knowing that you're continuing this long as human existence tradition?
It makes me feel kind of small in a way, but it's also cool to be a little brick in that puzzle you can really feel that these tunes have been polished over generations, you know. So many of the tunes are such fine little melodies, and I like to think of it almost as a distilling process where, you know, only the best drops survive up until our time in a way. So it's really hard to compose a new fiddle tune that has the same qualities as the old ones have.
How'd you get connected with the Bemidji Contra Dance?
I got connected with the O'Neill family band in East Grand Forks, and they connected me with the good folks in Bemidji. So Bemidji will be your first time for me on this tour.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the O'Neill family band has played at many of our dances here in Bemidji, many of our contra dances.
Yeah, so
yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what will be, maybe Mitch, let's talk to you about what will be going on this Saturday?
Right. Well, this Saturday, we're meeting in the Solway Lammers Town Hall in beautiful downtown Solway, Minnesota. And we are starting with a potluck at 5:30, and everyone's welcome. And we have this potluck to greet Christian and WB, as well as our guest caller, who is David Kirchner from Minneapolis. And so we're going to do that. And then at 6:30, we'll start our dance and a silent auction. And this is our first ever fundraising event that we have had for Bemidji Contra Dance.
Do you have kind of a set list in mind yet? Or do you kind of wait till see what the vibe is like at the dance?
Oh, we have a kind of big set list that we can pick from, because we played contra dances before in Seattle. In the spring here earlier in March, I was out in Seattle and playing with WB there. So we have some stuff ready for that, and I hope there will be enough. I'm pretty sure we have plenty of tunes. So,
is there a difference for you as a performer when music that you're performing for people to appreciate, but also this time you're playing music for also people to dance with? What is that energy like for you as a performer? Does it add energy to your performance knowing that people are dancing to the music?
Yeah, it certainly does. As I was trying to also mention in the beginning, that you can kind of feel that these tunes were made for dancing in the first place. So when they still are danced to, I think, yeah, it really gives something extra to the music. And you can hear the feet, but you can also see and look at all the people moving around, and that makes it a lot of fun. So I look forward to that.
Mitch, how can people participate this Saturday?
Right, just show up. Come for the potluck, or just come for the dance, or just come for the music. We'll have the extra chairs sitting out. So if you don't think that you want to dance, but you do want to listen to the music and meet WB and Christian, we'll have chairs available for you to sit and listen. And we encourage you to bid on our silent auction items. I'm really excited about this. We're getting some great items in. We have a handmade charcuterie board from the Ellingsons. And we have a yoga session. We have a myofascial release session that was given to us by April over in Bagley. There's a mushroom experience, a mushroom hike that I am donating. Should be lots of fun. I'm really excited to have these special guests and have this opportunity to make people more aware of contra dance in our area, and also maybe the cost of contra dance too, because an average dance costs us between $800 and $1,000 to fund. And so we'll be exploring in the next several months new ways to make this more sustainable. We have been very fortunate to get some large grants from Region 2 Arts Council in the past and from other funders, but that's not something that you can always rely on as a sustainable source of funding. So we're going to be exploring some new ways to make it sustainable.
So, Christian, a question for you. Did you in your wildest dreams at 7 years old think that you would end up be performing across the United States and then also performing in places like northern Minnesota like this?
You're right. I didn't imagine that in my wildest dreams. That's true. When I picked up the violin at the age of 11 and started practicing, you know, if I could have known, that would have been pretty crazy. So it's certainly a dream coming true for me to be here and be able to do this as a living and tour around and meet people and play for concerts and dances. And yeah, It's great.
Is there a place that people can check out your music?
Yes, for sure. I have a website, which is just my name, Christian with a K, and then B-U-G-G-E is my last name, and then .com. That's where you can also find my whole tour schedule for this Midwest tour, where we have 17 stops, a lot of them in Minnesota, but also in South Dakota, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, and Wisconsin. But also you can find my music on Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube, and just by searching my name again.
And just encourage people to show up and have a lot of fun. Country dancing is a really fun thing. You don't need any special experience to do it. Everything is taught on the spot by the caller. All ages are welcome. All abilities are welcome. You don't need a partner. You can just show up and we'll pair you up with somebody. And it's a great exercise as well. I mean, you'll feel it by the end of the evening.
Yeah. That's true. That's usually how it is. Yeah, make people sweat a little bit.
That's good.
Yeah.
Christian Buga and Mitch Mitchell have been my guests today. The next Bemidji Contra Dance is May 16th with a dance and silent auction, and Christian will be performing with W.B. Reed. The event is this Saturday at 6:30 p.m. in Solway. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
This week's picks from 76, A Day at the Races from Queen, their fifth studio album and highly anticipated follow-up to A Night at the Opera. Like its predecessor, this album title was inspired by A Day at the Races film, continuing Queen's fascination with old Hollywood glamour. This is also the first Queen album completely self-produced by the band after splitting with producer Roy Thomas Baker during the recording. You can hear the group really testing its confidence in the studio, pushing layered harmonies and elaborate arrangements even further while still holding on to their heavier rock roots. The biggest hit was Somebody to Love, which shows off Queen's massive gospel-inspired vocal arrangements and became one of Freddie Mercury's defining performances. It feels like an important bridge between the early progressive rock era and the massive arena rock run that followed with News of the World.
And that is Picks of 76 in celebration of the 50 years of KAXE. We're celebrating the albums that are also celebrating 50 years. And we had one a few weeks ago that our very own TJ Dang made about the album The Modern Lovers, first self-titled.
What a great record.
Yes.
Oops, am I on?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Radio.
Have you met Jonathan Richman?
Personally, no, but I saw him perform solo.
I saw him load up a van once.
Did you meet him then?
No.
Oh, okay.
You
didn't
help him? I told people I did, though.
Did you make up a whole story about it?
Yeah, like I made up a story that I had a cigarette with Jonathan Richman.
And then we high-fived.
But then as soon as you said you had a cigarette, people didn't believe it.
No, it was during my smoking days.
You had smoking days?
Yeah, one summer.
Oh.
What's happening?
It's too close to 9 o'clock to drop this bomb on us now.
Yeah.
Well, I told you the ghost story today.
Marlboro Reds?
No, it was Marlboros.
Okay, lights?
Yeah.
All
wow.
Right.
I just can't picture it.
It looks cool. Just kidding.
It did not look cool whenever I tried. I looked like a poser if I ever tried to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
It
didn't work.
It was trying to be at this when you hit a certain point in college and you're at a bar and suddenly you're like, yeah. And then you forget. And this is, of course, back in the day when you could smoke in bars.
Yeah.
And you'd be hungover not from what you drank, but from all the smoke in the bar, I think.
Oh, and your clothes smell like it too.
Yeah.
No thanks.
It never quite clicked with me either. I'm a little too wholesome looking to be a smoker, I think. Or something. I don't know. It just didn't quite look right. I thought it looked cool, but
it was the way I would hold it. That's what it was for me. Yeah, I'd do some sort
cigarello.
Of cigarello. Like, I don't know. Which fingers.
Well,
and
my problem was I was feel like I was missing out on conversations my friends were having because they would go out to smoke and be like, well,
oh, sure.
I want to be part of that. So it was peer pressure, I guess.
You put on yourself. You peer pressured yourself. Yeah.
Fear of missing out. We were talking about that
FOMO.
Earlier.
JOMO is what I enjoy.
Joy of missing out.
Like if someone, like even if you really want to see someone, but you're kind of like, God, I got this thing to do tonight. And they say, I can't make it. It's like, yes.
Joy of missing out.
A free night.
So, Dan, we made some guesses of what song you're going to start the show off with. And
you were wrong.
I was wrong. I thought you were going to play Stevie Wonder. I guess not.
Stevie Wonder's in the set list because it's his birthday today.
Wow.
Yep. So you were close.